podcast is to help you break in and thrive in advertising. And we do that every week by bringing on amazing guests who are rocking it in advertising. This week, you will learn from Jalene Delisle, founder and head of creative at The Working Assembly. The Working Assembly is a branding and creative agency collaborating with emerging and evolving brands. She started it around 5.5 years ago. Today, they partner with an exciting array of companies who lean on their bespoke, expert-led teams and unconventional design, advertising, and technology capabilities. They've worked with Evian, Instagram, Spotify, Felix Gray, the Museum of Ice Cream, MassMutual, and plenty more over the years. Jolene's work has been recognized by the Type Directors Club, Print, DNAD, The One Show, Fast Company, and she's been named to the Forbes Next 1000 Entrepreneur list. And in 2022 was Adweek's Creative 100, honoring the most innovative and inspiring individual. Wow. She is passionate about bridging the gender equity and diversity gap in creativity and tech and launched the TWA Labs in 2019 to invest in women and founders of color. It doesn't get much better than this. If you want to connect with Jalene and see her secret resources curated just for you, you have to head to our Instagram at Breaking and Entering Pod, all one word, at Breaking and Entering Pod. Now on with this phenomenal show. This is the Breaking and Entering Advertising Podcast. And as usual, I'm your accomplice, Gino Schellenberger. Kick it, Mikey. Jalene Delisle, welcome to the Breaking and Entering Advertising Podcast. Thanks so much for coming on. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Amazing. We have a lot to talk about. You have such an interesting career, but for now, we'll go over the basics. Top line, the headline, you are the founder and head of creative at The Working Assembly. Tell us about what this Working Assembly is. It is a branding and creative agency. Is that correct?
Yeah, we're a branding and creative agency. We started the company in 2017, and really with the focus of helping brands at various inflection points. So we work with fast growth startups as they're kind of emerging and creating a brand. And then we also work with, I would say, evolving, like larger companies who are looking to break into new verticals, who are looking to create new brand touch points. So we kind of work with brands at both sizes.
Okay. Small and large. And what are they coming, like, what are they coming to you for? Like, what do they need help with?
I always thought about kind of brand development as a really interesting piece, in that oftentimes people think of branding as just visual identity, like logo and kind of the maybe brand strategy or foundational work. And then advertising oftentimes gets into like the communications, the campaigns, the marketing. Mm-hmm. But when I think about a consumer, like you and I, and just anyone else who kind of interacts with a brand, to them, they don't think of it as so siloed and so vertical, so kind of separate. And so I also want to make sure that we have that same approach too. So we think about ourselves doing anything around consumer behavior and interaction with a brand. So if you look at a logo, if you interact with the brand, if you engage with the brand, if you post about the brand, if you think about how the brand talks, speaks, acts, and also, of course, how it sounds within advertising. We do all of that. So we really think about ourselves as kind of omnichannel, and really wherever the brand is something we can help with.
So I'm thinking strategists. I'm thinking, like, do you have copywriters? You have designers? You have, like, art directors? What does this consist of? How do you do to understand or to create this experience for these clients? Who's helping to achieve all this?
Yeah. And it was exactly kind of our thinking too. We want to almost create the agency as almost like a creative collective. It's why we called it Working Assembly, because really this idea of this assembly model where, depending on what the project is and what it calls for, it could ask for different types of people and disciplines. And so our designers are also art directors. Mm-hmm. Our, you know, brand managers are also client services, but they also are strategists. And so we've kind of found these people who have are kind of Swiss Army knives. They have, you know, maybe one thing that they're really super talented at, and that's like their superpower. But then they have all these other kind of ancillary disciplines that are complementary and help round out their skills. And we really like to think of ourselves as like a creative collective. We kind of approach each project kind of building and assembling a team. And so if it's an experiential project, we have a producer involved. We have people who are concepting from a creative team standpoint what the experience could be like. But then, you know, our brand managers are collaborating with that producer and thinking about how that executes too. So it is kind of a little bit less of a traditional approach.
Interesting. And you've been doing this for about 5 years now, almost six, right in the middle there. How has it grown? Let's talk about some of the clients that maybe you started off with, where you're super proud of, and now where are you at today?
Yeah, for sure. So I started the company in 2017. I was actually 3 months pregnant with my daughter, who is now five. And so it was definitely not a common time to start your own company.
Wait, you were 3 months pregnant when you started your company?
I was, yeah. And I was actually still working full time. And so first year, I would say that this really was a little bit of a side hustle. So I started the company and would basically work and kind of set up the work in the beginning of the day. And then at the end of the day, I would, the work day of my other job, I would kind of start back up and work on this. And
heck yeah. What was your other job?
I worked in advertising at an agency.
How'd you get away with that?
So I was a freelancer. I was a full-time freelancer that year. So I was a contractor. That definitely helped. But of course, as you're working advertising, it's not a 9-to-5 job. It's not easy. And I was on 3 pitches that year that we won for that agency that I worked at. And then I also brought in almost $2 million worth of business our first year at Working Assembly.
Oh, heck yeah. All while being 3 months pregnant or around then.
Yep, exactly. It was a pretty wild time, but I think one of the things I learned is like when you have to do something, you do it. And it was one of those situations where I really believe that this idea I had of creating this agency could really be something. And I was really committed to making it happen. I think it just kind of proves if you like work at something that you really believe in, are passionate about, anything's possible. For me, when we first started, we had a lot of startups that were our initial clients.
Yep,
I really want to work with underserved founders, women founders. And that was kind of the start of the company. We really want to like be focused around that. And then over time, we've grown to also now have more corporate and traditional clients as well.
Gotcha. Do you want to give a shout out to some of those early clients or some of the current ones today?
Sure. We were working a lot in the very initial stages with some of the like really well-known female-founded companies like The Skim, Rent the Runway, Zola, Lola Tampons. And then we wound up getting a really, I would say, kind of a serendipitous, I'd like to say serendipitous versus lucky break where we won Mass Mutual and we did their brand work. And that was a really big deal for us because we were a very small company, and to work on a Fortune 100 branding project for a company that was one of the biggest financial services in the world was a really big deal. And I think it definitely helped jumpstart our company to kind of where we are today.
Yes, absolutely. Give you some confidence, maybe some capital too.
For sure.
Yeah. Amazing. Amazing. So a lot to uncover there, creating your own agency. There are some podcasts, I think, like Talking to Ourselves, like they specialize in starting agencies or like interviewing people that have started agencies like Greg Hahn. I listened to that one, but we're here to focus on you, your story, and advice for aspiring advertisers specifically. Now, people listening to this could know about your agency as well, and they want to get just mid-level to senior level jobs working with you because they heard such great things. So that we won't take that off the table either. So I want to know, like, let's talk about who you are. And you have some really great titles on LinkedIn. You're obviously the founder of the Working Assembly. You're a Forbes Next 1000 and an Adweek Creative 100. You're an investor, an advisor. What is Chief? I see this too.
Chief is a women's network for like CEOs, C-suite level and founders.
And how have you been involved with that?
I'm just a founding member.
You're a founding member.
It's like a private club.
Okay. I saw that too. I was curious. So yeah, obviously you're a leader and you're super creative, but when you started off, like, were you?
Yeah. So I started off as a designer, production designer, and I did a lot of studio work. And I actually think it was really helpful and foundational in starting in advertising because I got a chance to really understand kind of how advertising gets like resized, how you have to reformat the same kind of line of copy 13 different ways and really ship something. So I worked in the studio at an ad agency.
Where were you before that? Like, when did you realize you wanted to get into advertising? Like, what was that?
Yeah. Well, I went to school originally for journalism. Okay. I also did design. And so for me, I always thought that I would end up working in like a magazine editorial. And while I found that really interesting, I wound up finding myself really drawn to advertising and to this idea that when you work in advertising, it's really kind of the perfect mix and blend of art and copy. It's both. And so it was kind of natural for me to love it. And I also have always been a storyteller. I love stories and I love making people feel something and when they both look at something and hear something. So I think advertising is just one of those places where storytellers like to be. And I was really naturally drawn to that. So when I started in production studio design, I also would write copy. I would get these projects where my CD at the time would say, I know you want to be a writer, but you're working as a studio designer, retouching and kind of resizing mechanicals. If you want to write some copy for me, I have a couple of 15-second spots. You can just pitch me some ideas, write some headlines and share it with me. So I would just always be that person going around to all the CDs, asking if anyone needed help, if I could write something, if I could design something, if I could pitch in.
They love it.
And I think just showing kind of that initiative and also, I honestly was a stalker. I like knew everything about everyone I worked with and I would just talk to them about the projects they've done, the commercials they had done. One of my original bosses, John Staffin, he created like the Kit Kat commercial, like the jingles. I was asking about that. And, you know, I think part of the thing is like being interesting and being interested, right? People want to know that you care. And I think that's one of the things I did when I started out in my career was just really wanting to make sure people understood that I was really passionate about advertising and wanted to help and do whatever it takes. I would also volunteer for all the pitches. And so I wound up kind of moving up within advertising pretty quickly. I wound up going from a studio designer to a designer to a junior AD to a senior AD. I did a brief stint in Philadelphia, worked at a couple of small agencies, which I thought was super helpful to like understand, especially when you work with a smaller team and not as big of resources as like Mother or Arnold or any of these kind of bigger agencies, like how much you have to do. Yeah. That was really great too, as far as the experience.
So what was that first agency where you kind of were like raising your hand? Deutsch. And how did you get in there again?
So I would just cold called and email people. I mean, this was like early 2000. So I was just emailing people and just messaging them and asking them if I could do free internships, which I didn't get paid. And I did a lot of internships and just worked my way up.
Yeah. A lot of them are paid now, but especially during the off season of internships, kind of like right now, like fall, not many agencies will have like a fall internship. And
that's a really good note. Yeah.
Yeah. I know like there's some winternships I've heard of. And spring obviously is when they open up. But yeah, during the off season of the internship, like right now, you can just like be like, hey, can I shadow you? Or can I sit in for free?
I think also it's knowing how to read like a room, read a person and know how to be additive instead of taking away. So I always was really conscious of making sure I didn't take up someone's time too much. I was always bringing something to the table.
I definitely agree. Personally, like, I've heard philosophies where people and should just give back automatically. You should just ask as a student and you should express interest in their work, and then they should automatically, they owe you their time because somebody else did that. That's a philosophy. You might agree with it or not. That's one perspective. My perspective has always been kind of like what yours is. And I've gotten flack for this on the podcast, and I'm okay with it. I think, like, what can you offer? Even if you're a student, like, do you have some sort of insight on what Gen Z thinks about shoes? Do you have some sort of insight on what Gen Z thinks about the BET awards coming up? I know there's like some, Adidas is getting some flack right now from Kanye, like adding even cultural awareness to some things. Like, you can offer, like, you can definitely figure out what you can offer that, or even TikTok, figuring out like what the best way to use that is, or you're good at it. Cause I, right now I can use somebody that's good at TikTok on my podcast, side note, but offering value. I'm always on that side. I agree with you on that.
Yeah. One of my first bosses was super into music, and he was always looking for good tracks to license for commercials. And I always overheard him asking people to send him music, and I would just send him songs all the time. I would see what the script and storyboard was, and I would just be like, oh, this, I think this song might work, or that song. And I got two or three of them in. And I think that also helped, just showing that you're culturally aware, that you can bring ideas to the table that aren't so traditional. It doesn't have to always be a line of copy or a layout. It could be things like music or casting ideas.
Yeah. And even if you are unemployed, or you're obviously, or you're a student right now, by like a good idea, so let's say you want to be in strategy, is like create like five slides or something, or some report or some research on a topic like quiet quitting in the workplace and how a brand can tackle that, or work with that. Like, just send that to somebody right away.
Yeah.
And they'll definitely appreciate it. And you're already adding value. And then they can see, like, if it's good, then they might want to bring you on for a little bit
more.
I agree.
I didn't go to a portfolio school. So I went to school for design. And so when I was done with design, I didn't have a traditional like advertising book. And so the internships definitely helped. But I also would just create my own ads, my own campaigns.
Yeah, spec work.
And spec work as much as I could. And I think one of the things that's frustrating to me now is sometimes I'll interview people for jobs and they're like, hey, of course I don't have that kind of work. I just graduated. I'm like, yeah, but that's the kind of school, to show that kind of initiative that you've kind of put that work in, and have a little bit of that kind of self-initiation, like, attitude, I think really shows something.
Yes. Yes. And spec work is so, so important, or any work really, like any samples.
Yeah. When I started working assembly, we took a lot of clients on that we didn't charge, or they paid us very little. And I was really all about proving ourselves once again. I did tons of kind of spec projects. I did tons of free work. I would just hop on calls with people and just try to share ideas and thoughts I had for their brands. And that all built to relationships. Everything we've done to date, we've never pitched any business, but that work that I did that first year or two really helped kind of set us up, because those clients from our first year or two business have all been the clients that have referred us to the clients that we have now and have grown our business. So I think, yes, I don't think you should do work for free. I try to say that, but I also think there is something to the point of, I was an unknown agency and we had a lot to prove, and I was willing to put the work in to do that.
Yes. And while you're a student, like still an undergrad, like that's all you have the time. That's what you're there for.
1,000%.
Like put in that work, spec work, especially. Like there are websites you can go to, like the Young Shits Awards, I think is one that I always reference on this podcast. I don't know if you know of any, but they do like a monthly brief and awards, like really cool creative briefs that they judge. It's like a small, like one-on-one you get with the judge at the time for that month if you win, but getting reps at those creative briefs is super important.
Well, I met with someone recently who said that they wanted to be into advertising, make commercials, make videos. And I was like, well, there's YouTube, like there's Instagram. Like I don't see you making content, like make your own content. Like,
heck yeah.
Show me stuff that you've made. So I think it is, we're living in a time that's kind of amazing, where you can do that and you can kind of self-publish. You can start your own agency. You can start your own podcast. You can create your own content. So it, I feel like people don't have the excuse anymore.
Exactly. Like I know myself, like I don't want to be an advertising creative per se, and I'm okay with that. But if I did want to be, I know every idea that I think of, like I would soon have to create. You have to execute. Just any idea that you have the tools to do it or write it on a piece of paper and start from there. But as soon as you think of something, an ad or a concept or something, like you got to go, you got to create it. And you have the tools. An iPhone can shoot anything right now. So just my thoughts, but this is awesome. You said you had a lot of twists and turns in your career, going back to your flow here, and you kind of dipped in and out of design, advertising, you said freelance. What were the reasons for that? Where did you venture off to? Tell us more about like those different, the range of your capabilities.
It's interesting because I think in a lot of ways, I thought of myself as kind of nomadic with my career. I would kind of find things I was interested in, try doing them. And, you know, so I was interested in copywriting. I was doing copywriting. I was interested in design, as a designer, working at a design studio. And then I was interested in art direction. So then I went into the more traditional route of going into art direction. I wanted to learn how products got shipped. So then I got a job at Instagram. And I think one of the things that I think about now with my career is that all those things that I learned all wound up being skills and experience I was able to acquire. So did it make sense? I worked at an architectural interior design group working on brand builds for like Anthropology and Urban Outfitters. At the time, no, but now having worked at Working Assembly, I've been able to bring that experience and design the Museum of Ice Cream with our clients. And so it does, I think that there is twists and turns that your career makes, but if you can take nuggets and experience and skills from each of those experiences that maybe don't feel like they make sense, they might later.
Yeah. And you don't realize it at the time, I'm sure.
No, at the time I felt like a failure. Yeah. I'm like, I can't get a job in advertising. I'm going to take this job in kind of this architectural interior design firm and like do this. And like, I didn't think that would be, I thought it would be a blip in my career that wouldn't amount to anything. And it wound up being the same firm that at the time was doing like all the Warby Parker stores,
great.
Yeah. And wound up doing, and I learned so much about brand extension into retail and physical space. And I was like, oh, wow, this is like a really cool experience. Then I went back into advertising. I was like, oh, I'll never do that again. And cut to now, one of the biggest things that we do at Working Assembly is we do a lot of, we do the brand work, but then we also do the builds and design of spaces for clients.
And you said Museum of Ice Cream. Do you do the, I know the one in Chicago just opened up. So
yeah, we did the one in New York, the flagship one, and that's did so all the cool brand work for them. Yeah.
I want to go. Is there like a bunch of free ice cream?
They do give you ice cream. Yeah.
And you've been in there, obviously?
Yeah, I have.
Okay. Noted. We'll talk on the side about that. I had some plans, so might need to ask a favor.
Sounds good.
Amazing. Okay. So bring us up to the, lead us up to the point where you're thinking like, all right, you started to get the itch to create your own agency. Like what was going on right beforehand?
Yeah. So I was working, I decided I wanted to freelance to be able to kind of have the freedom to work on campaigns and brands I was interested in. I had worked for a number of years on kind of the same account, building that client relationship and trust. It was really great. And I think that experience was super important for kind of client services and learning about account management, which is a big part of what I do day to day running a company. But I wanted to kind of get back into doing creative work too, because I do think there comes a point where once you become a creative director, you're maybe less as involved in kind of the day-to-day work and you're kind of overseeing projects. I want to still be very much in like creation mode. And I thought freelancing at a bunch of different agencies, I made a list of 5 or 6 I really want to work at. And I basically targeted each of them. And worked as a freelancer at each for a long period of time, for like 6 months at a time. So I could really kind of embed myself and immerse myself in what those agencies were doing. What were they really good at? Like, I would work at Sidley, for instance. I was like, wow, this place is amazing. They started out doing Sidley.
Okay.
They're an agency that started out in Canada. They had an office in New York for a while and also in LA.
Sidley.
Yes. And I love their work. They were on my list. I was like, I need to work there and see what kind of work they do and how they make this work happen. And I knew this agency had done Cirque du Soleil. And I also knew that they had done all this work for Absolute, and they had done all this other advertising work, and they had beautiful design. And I was like,
oh yeah.
I was like, wow, this place is amazing. I really want to see how they do it. And working there, I got to meet such interesting creative people. I loved how multidisciplinary their approach was. And then from there, I went and worked at Anomaly. I got to see what they're all about and how they have a design practice within their agency, how they run pitches, how they approach work. And it was honestly like the best education, just making that list and going to all those different agencies and learning and working and seeing how they pitch work and how they win work. And I kind of did that over and over again to the point that I thought, okay, what are the holes that I'm seeing that maybe those agencies aren't serving? Where is the white space? It was almost like my own kind of competitive audit, right? Where I was like, what's kind of the white space for what my agency could do?
Did you know that going into this?
I did, yeah.
Ah, you're smart.
And so I kind of thought, what are they really good at? Where do they fall apart? And one of the things I realized was that one thing they all had in common was there was always this pain point where a client, especially if they want to do innovation or a new product, they wouldn't maybe go to the advertising agency first. They would go to the branding agency, work with them for 6 months, then go to the advertising agency, brief them on the brand. Then the advertising agency would try to kind of want to leave their mark on that new product and brand as well, try to redo a bunch of the strategy work. And I thought, why can't the person doing the strategy work at the branding agency also do the campaign work? And so it was really kind of what my thinking was, is if we can kind of start and build that client trust right from the beginning as a branding agency, we could then kind of continue to work with them to then amplify the brand after we build the brand.
Ah, gotcha. So do most big brands go to a branding agency first and then to a creative advertising agency?
A lot of times, unless they're incubating something internally and then they brief an advertising agency. But I think oftentimes, like, one thing I realized is that a lot of ad agencies I worked at, they also wanted to get into branding. They also had branding practices internally.
Right.
But clients would often kind of look at them as like their AOR that just did like their campaigns.
Right.
And then they would hire a branding agency that was very specific around like visual identity and like the foundational work. And so I just thought there's this opportunity for like kind of these mid-sized brands that aren't huge, that aren't super small, that maybe need a partner that can do both.
Got it. And you created that.
I did.
And then that takes us to the beginning of the story, but scared, optimistic, what were those initial feelings when you started off, and who helped you, and who were some of those foundational people that helped you?
It's interesting because I had worked for a bunch of different CDs, ECDs, GCDs, head of brand strategy. I reached out to a lot of people in my past life, just mining information. How do I write a scope of work? And I contacted this woman I know who was running group accounts over at JWT. And she was like, this is how you write a scope. And she kind of walked me through that process because I was my own account person and writing my own scope of work. And I'd never done that as a creative person. I met with someone I knew who was running strategy at another agency, and they helped me kind of understand a little bit more about strategy decks and like what their process was and what my process might need to be. And so I was really fortunate in that I made a lot of really good connections along the way. Right. And I think that's also part of what I would say as an approach to young people who are starting out in advertising, to think about every single person that you meet, this industry you might meet later, or your reputation might follow you. And so I always approached all of those kind of conversations, interactions, knowing that, not that I necessarily would have to call them again in another time for something, but that that I could, and that our relationship was sound, and I always made a good impression on people, and that I always approached those interactions with like the best intent. And it really did pay forward, because it was those relationships that kind of helped me as I started.
Absolutely. You have to.
I also,
so small, and like people talk, and like I've heard horror stories of people like banned from the industry because of things they've done or said. And it's really, it's true. Like you have to be careful.
I also just tapped into a lot of my creative friends. I had a lot of really kind of very senior creative professionals who were excited to work on side projects, who wanted to kind of contribute and do something fun. And we're all creatives. We love to create all the time. And sometimes our day-to-day jobs don't always allow ourselves to do that as much as possible. So I think I was also tapping into this like kind of cultural zeitgeist at the moment where people just wanted to kind of see what startups were about, kind of want to get a little peek behind that and kind of dip their toes in there. And so I was also able to tap into a lot of creatives that I knew who were excited to kind of help and work on projects and kind of partner together. And originally when I pitched clients, I would say, hey, the best people that you know actually work somewhere else. And that's why I'm calling it working assembly, because they're all working. And then we kind of assemble and work for you. That only lasted for a little bit. I couldn't work with part-time workers all the time. But it was an interesting pitch that definitely resonated with clients.
Gotcha. So it was like kind of gathering like freelance people or in the beginning?
Freelance and talent, and curating it and kind of approaching it as like a curated talent for projects. And then of course that eventually, as our clients got bigger and the budgets got bigger, we were able to hire people full time.
Gotcha. So do you still draw on that model a little bit, obviously, with your full time employees?
I do. I draw on that model where I do try to like make sure that people are going to be really passionate and excited about the project they're on and assigned to. But I also will bring in specialists. So I still bring in people from my past life and from my connections and network who I think are specialists in certain verticals and fields. Right now we're working on a project right now that it has a very specific target consumer. And so I called a bunch of people I know who kind of meet that target consumer and would be interested in this product. And I said, hey, any interest in like freelancing or working on this project with us and bringing a little bit of your personal expertise into it?
Yeah. So smart. And it's been working. Amazing.
Yeah.
All right. Then I want to take the last couple of minutes here, rattle off any other advice you might have thought of for aspiring advertisers that are breaking in. Who are you hiring? What do you look for? Obviously, you said multifaceted. You want some specialists here and there. But for the juniors, I don't know if you hire many juniors or you're planning to, or maybe in your past life or past careers when you're hiring juniors. What's the goal here? What do they need to be? What do they need to know? What should they look out for? How do they get a job?
Yeah. I'm actually hiring for junior writers and junior art directors. I'm also hiring for strategists. So probably at more the mid-level, as well as brand account people, kind of the mid-level. Nice. So definitely hiring across departments. I think the biggest thing that I really look for is just cultural diversity and thinking and life experience. What can you bring to the table that's really interesting and additive, and what are things that you're interested in? I always ask, what are the things that you are passionate about? And I want to see that come through. And then, of course, like the work, I want to see that you have a really good eye. That even if you're an account person, that you're someone who appreciates design and creativity and movies and films and music. And
good taste.
You're someone, and that you're someone who, is an arbitrator of taste and like and interest in culture and people.
I love that. And how could they, so how could somebody like on the account or on the account side, we'll go just keep it simple. How can they display that if maybe they don't have a full flesh portfolio, which is starting to be the trend now that they're probably going to need it soon?
Oh, account people need portfolios too?
I think that's, it's not there yet, at least that I've talked to people about, but it's coming. I think they should be prepared for that. It's just like showing like your connections, showing your work that maybe like the projects you've been on.
Yeah, I think
that's like my prediction. Soon they'll need some sort of visual website of some sort. But regardless, how can, for today, when you're looking at account, like, how can you determine that they have good taste?
Yeah. So for me, I think it's more about, like, I'll ask questions when I interview account people, because I'll always do our initial calls. Actually, I always meet with people before they meet with anyone else on my team. Nice. Is I always ask, you know, what are things that you're excited about in your day? What are the things that you've kind of brought to those clients that maybe they didn't think about before? And if they, people answer things like, well, that's not really within my job, or yeah, that's not really within my expertise. Like, those are all kind of warnings for me that red maybe that they're not going to be a good fit for us. Yeah.
I don't touch that. That's just for creatives.
Yeah.
Okay. Makes sense. But being able to speak on some stuff that you're passionate about, movies.
Yeah. Or art, like, what were the books, kind of interesting experiences and challenges? I think that everyone is creative. Everyone's able to contribute ideas. Everyone's able to look at work and assess it and know whether it's good or bad. And so, yeah. I mean, we're all consumers too. So I ask a lot of questions around what they've been watching and listening to and interested in.
Heck yeah. I love it. All right, Jolene, I think we covered a lot here. So I collected your resources that you recommend specifically to the aspiring advertiser. We're not going to tell those right now. What people will have to do is go to our Instagram at Breaking and Entering Pod. They can find those there. I'll list those out. And they can also find how to contact you. We'll put that information there as well. So we'll tease them, make sure they go there. So are you all good with that, though? Any other things that you want to say?
Good. No, I think that sounds great. I mean,
are people,
I think,
able to reach out to you in general?
Yeah, absolutely. I love it. Yeah, okay. Thank you so much.
All right. So we'll tell them on our Instagram how to contact you. There'll be our little thing there. Lead magnet, I believe that's what it's called. Cool. All right, Jolene, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for listening to this entire episode of the Breaking and Entering Advertising Podcast. If you like what you heard, it would mean a lot to us and help us grow and get better guests and better break-ins if you can go to Apple Podcasts and leave us 5 stars and a small review if you have the time. Be sure to connect with our guests if you like what they said by going to our Instagram at Breaking and Entering Pod. That's all one word, Breaking and Entering Pod on Instagram. We have links to their portfolios and their LinkedIn, and they want to connect, so do that. And thank yous. Thank you to Mikey Malarkey, our audio engineer, and Buchan Jung, our creative director. Can't do without you two, and a team from the University of Illinois. It's a student team from the agency called AdBuzz. They're a PR agency, and it's been a pleasure working with them. Thank you all so much, and we will see you next week with another amazing guest.